Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, hello and welcome to my silly little internet show. The internet connection here is not that great, so hopefully you all can hear me well. If you can't, let me know in the comments. And we're going to get started with the show. I want to talk about a few things, but the first thing I want to go into is just talking about river levels. Last week, there were a lot of questions about the Middle Fork and river levels, and I'm just getting so many questions about low water, and last episode, it was kind of frustrating to me, and it still kind of is because rivers are natural for the most part. Like, if you're a river runner, the flow should matter, but it shouldn't be something your big stress point. You just go, you do it, or you don't, right? But like, I think that people are like expecting the Middle Fork to be the perfect flow, and expecting the Illinois to be the perfect flow, expecting the Rogue and every other river, and flows change. So year to year, trip to trip, on a lot of factors are just different. The Middle Fork, I just want to point out, is not that low. I keep hearing this over and over and over. The Middle Fork's low. It's going to be low. It is low. Here's the graph. Average, so as you can see the line, average is just above that. We're pretty close to average flows, and it's trending towards the average. If you look, we're getting closer and closer to average. That dotted line below, that's the lowest ever. So, like, if we were closer to that line, that I'd call that low. Sure, that can be low. But it's fine. Like, actually, if flows are within 80 and 120% of average, that's good. We're probably in the 80 right now. I'm going to call it good. Now, if it was, right now it's like 2.2 feet. If it was like 1.8 right now, I'd be like, yeah, it's low. We're having a low water year. It's pretty bad. Now, this is lower than average. But this is certainly within the realm of normal. So same thing is happening with the Rogue. And I want to look at the Rogue flows. A lot of you are probably accustomed to 2,000 CFS in the summer, or 2,200 CFS in the summer, whatever. Let me see what we get for a flow page here. Hopefully this link works. I usually go to Wild Water Guidebook to find the flow pages I like. Let's see if the internet here is really slow. It's going to open up. Here it is. And so the dam is releasing 1,400, but some of that goes into irrigation. So we're getting about 1,200 CFS. Now, a lot of you are like, it's so low. And actually, I heard they're going to drop it 100. So it's going to be 1,100 CFS here pretty quick. It's really fun. Like, it's still a great river. It's different. The rapids are different. You can't scout your lines on YouTube because it'll be different. You need to have boating skill, the ability to read water, make decisions. But to me, that's boating. To me, boating is you develop skills and you go apply them. Not just, I've done the Rogue 10 times at 2000 CFS. Now it's 1200. The world's going to fall apart. I don't even know where to go or how to do it. Like, this is using your reading water skills and your abilities to make it down. And 1200 is great. Now, if the river gets below 900, like, yeah, it's getting pretty low. And right now it's lower than average, but I'm not even calling this that low yet. Now, if we get to 900, I'll say, okay, it's low water. Now we'll talk. Like, as an outfitter, I'm going to change the types of boats we bring. We're going to bring less stuff. We'll probably bring more boats on trips. We'll adjust accordingly, low water, do some low water things. But the main thing will be just bringing less stuff so our boats aren't as heavy, and potentially more boats. Okay, so that's a little caveat about water levels, just to follow up from last week, because I keep getting people asking me, how are you handling the low water? What's up with the low water? I just personally don't think it's low water. Unless you're in Colorado, but for the Middle Fork and the Rogue, I just don't see this as like that low of water. So next I want to talk about Submarine Hole. I brought this up before. This is a new website that I've put together, and it's intended as a professional discussion board. And let me see if I can bring it up here on the site. I'll go over here. Guys, I have to know how to use this. I'm going to bring it up. And for those of you that are watching, this is a YouTube live show. If you're listening to a podcast, sometimes me just rambling about how I'm pulling this off in the background is, I know it's horrible, but we're live here. And summary hole is a discussion board intended for river rescue instructors, rowing instructors, raft instructors, professional guides. And there are, you know, if private boaters have questions, especially people who are rowing school students of ours, there's a private boater section, but it's not intended for private boaters. There's already a pretty, there's already a website for that, and people can use that one if they want. But if you're a professional and you want a place to have conversations and share ideas, I just want to throw out, this is a place to come. And if I remember, I'll link to it in the show notes later on. Okay, let's get on to questions. I know a lot of you are like, stop talking. Let's just do questions. All right, here we go. Oh, wait, what? Did I have one more thing to talk about? No, I didn't. Okay, plastic gelato containers hold 3 rolls of Tarade and come filled with gelato. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of places you can put your Tarade. So last episode, I talked about Tarade containers. I have one here. I'm working on printing these. It says Tarade on it, which I worked really hard to get that to look like that and just look cool. I'm going to start producing these in light blue bottom, dark blue cap, I think. And this is a luxury item. This isn't something you need, but some of you might want it. Just it's very purpose built. It holds 2 rolls easily. It could hold 3 if you wanted to. But it's very protective, a nice cap. It says Tarade on it. It's like perfectly the right size. That's 1 roll right there. For those of you who want something that's just, I think, perfect, you can, if you don't think it's perfect, don't buy it. This is something we're replacing, we've been using in the past. This also works great. You can buy like an M&M mini thing and put your Tarade in here. There's all kinds of things you can buy to put your Tarade in. This is an example, and it comes filled with M&Ms. So for like whatever, $2, you get M&Ms in the container. It's not quite the right, it's a little too long, but it works. And plastic gelato containers work. There's a million cylinders out there that work, that come with stuff already. The thing that we found using them a bunch is if you have an M&M container in your repair kit, it's not obvious to everybody that's Tarade. People wonder what's in there. They don't look for Tarade in there. Now, you know, but if somebody else goes in there, or like I have a new guide goes in there, they won't know. Why is there M&Ms in their repair kit? If there's a random container that has a marking on it, they'll be like, oh, maybe let's see what's in there. And these over time, this kind of stuff, I've had things like this, they do break. So like 4 years later, this stuff cracks and it affects your Tarade. So long term, this should last. It's purpose built, and it's just it's cool, I think. So I'll be selling it at some point. It's 100% a luxury item. You don't need it, but if you want it, I'll be selling them. And the person making this comment, 100%, yeah, you can get a gelato container and be stoked. If you're the only one that uses it and you like it, you should do that because you get gelato. And I'm going to have to charge like $20-$25 to make this worth me printing a bunch of them. This takes, I think, 8 hours to print because I do this like fancy and knurling on the outside. If it was just a regular thing, it would be like 3 or 4. But it has this really cool texture that's easy to grab. So it's like an 8-hour print to make one. So it'll be like $20-$25. I got to figure it out when I get home. Okay, next question. Accident database. Do you have any guesses as to how many whitewater deaths are missing from the American Whitewater Accident Database? I have no idea. I think they do a pretty good job of getting most of them. I think Charlie is all over it. I don't think it captures them around the world, but I think it does a pretty good job of capturing most of them in the U.S. I wouldn't think that he misses many, honestly. He does. I mean, if I hear about a fatality, it's always there. So for example, has there ever been a death that you've known about but didn't make it in the database? Not that I can think of, no. Because I almost always follow up like a month later to read the report so I can learn more about it. So I can't think of an example of a death that's not in there. Would it be different in the case of commercial deaths versus, nope, he puts them both in there. I don't know of any. I know that commercial companies sometimes try to minimize the press about fatalities. There's a number of reasons they might want to do that. But I think Charlie still is able to list it. It just isn't, there's not a lot of press, but there's sometimes firsthand knowledge or information about it. But there might be less information about commercial deaths. There might be more. So I don't really know. Yep. I don't know what the difference would be. Okay. Whoa, this is, I need to get readers to read stuff like this. Let me read this. Tuolumne. OW, a member who has written before, a question for you on the Tuolumne. I just got off a two-day Oars trip. The fellow OWA member, for those of you who don't know, OWA is Oregon Whitewater Association, a great club for private boaters based in Portland. It's to me, the OWA is the epitome of what a whitewater club could and should be. They do trainings. They rent out a pool every March and do flip practice, throwback practice, and a wave pool. They do safety classes. They have informational meetings. It's a great organization, a great way to meet people. Anyway, I just got off a two-day Oars trip that a fellow OWA member won on the Tuolumne River. Wow, what an adventure. What fun. Yeah, I mean, the Tuolumne is where I, you know, spent a lot of my guiding career, in a place I personally love to death. So that's awesome. You got to go there. It's spectacular. It's really spectacular. You know, those of you that are bummed you didn't get a subway permit, just go do two Tuolumne trips. Just do back-to-back Tuolumne trips. There's probably more whitewater on one Tuolumne trip than a subway trip. Somebody's going to correct me here, but honestly, like, there's more condensed whitewater. There's more rapids per mile for sure in the Tuolumne. And it's not that hard to get a permit. Like, I forget the private permit system. And now that the road's open to put in, I think it's a little more feasible. It's an amazing river. Anyway, subsequent to that, I found your Gear Garage video of you running the river at 1300. We launched July 4th, and I believe our level was 1250. Yeah, cool. Yeah, I mean, I think the go-to flow in summers is 1,000. I worked a trip for Arda there like 4 or 5 years ago. I took a bunch of video, and we were lucky to have 1300. I'm not sure why there was so much water, but yeah, cool. I had such a good time. I want to take my son, who's 28, down next year as a reward for graduating from his master's program. As you indicate, you used to be guided in Tuolumne. I'm curious. What's your favorite level? Oh, man. It's honestly, my personal favorite level is 1,000 because I love rowing a big, heavy 16-foot gearboat down those tight channels. It is so hard, so demanding, so rewarding. I just, a Tuolumne 1,000 is just like, to me, the best. It's not for everybody, but it's the best. I would say the mid 2,000 range, it's just, it's most people, it's probably more fun for. It's big, splashy waves. Like, it's the epitome of like class 4 rafting. Just 2,000 to 3,000, pretty forgiving, big open lines, moves pretty fast. I think most people would probably enjoy 2,000 to 3,000 more. The like, and these flows have changed because the river's changed a lot since I was there, but so I'm making approximations. But like the 4,000 to 6,000, it starts getting really hard. Like, there's just, you take some big, difficult lines with big consequences, and it's very challenging for different reasons. You know, low water challenging is fun because if you make a mistake, you generally just get stuck. High water, like the 5,000 to 6,000, if you flip, it's a very difficult thing to recover from because the river's moving so fast. Right, or swims are hard to recover and pretty dangerous, and so you really have to be on your toes in the 4,000 to 6,000 range, and then above 6,000, cheat lines start opening up. So it actually gets easier, or used, you know, up to about 9,000. Now these, again, the new guides would say different numbers, but like up to like 8,000, 9,000, it starts getting a little easier, although more dangerous because a flip is more dangerous as the water rises, but these cheat lines open up, and so it actually gets easier. So it's higher risk, but also like easier maneuvers. And above 9,000, it's a couple rapids get really hard, and it just starts getting super dangerous. Anyway, let's see. So I'd say my favorite level is 1,000, but most people it's like 2,500. In a normal snowfall year, when is our optimal flows most likely to occur? Mid-June. I mean, typically the peak happens in a typical year, like a typical Tuolumne year, the peak happens end of May, beginning of June. It can be later in June. I remember doing a mid-June trip at 8,000 once, a high water year. So it can be high all the way through early July. I feel like I did 6,000 once July 6th on a high water year. But a normal water year, if you want the perfect, it's just hard. I mean, it's like the beginning of my first conversation when I started. It's a river. I don't know. The flow is going to be what it's going to be. If you want to go see the Tuolumne 2500, I don't tell you. Like, move there. Go on a moment's notice. To plan this far ahead on a flow is just hard. You know, if you book a trip for early June, it could be perfect. It could be low. It could also be like very dangerously high. And it's Mother Nature. So I, unfortunately, I can't tell you when to go to find the flows you want. My advice, I love April trips. April is generally, it's before the snowpack. It can be cold and rainy, but April, it was generally that 2,000 to 3,000 range. And the wildflowers are going off. So like a 2-day trip in April is probably your best bet. Otherwise, it's just a gamble. Cool. Those are the only questions. Sweet. Yeah, I'm glad you like Tuolumne. It's an awesome place. Like I'm trying to go back this year, but it's not looking likely. Comment. I'll be on the Tuolumne next month. I'm stoked to get back out there. The logistics are funky now, but I think I got it. Yeah, the problem is the put-in road and the takeout road both closed. I think the put-in road's open. It's just tricky to do a trip there, but it's a very special place. Tuolumne's completely unpermitted this year too. Interesting. Yeah, it used to be, if I remember right, 2 privates, 2 commercials per day. And there was a lottery to get private starts, but I remember it's also like there were so many cancellations, it wasn't a big deal. And somebody can correct me, but it was like it was never that hard to get on as a private boater. Because we'd paddle on our days off. Like we'd have our day off, we go kayaking, we just pick up a permit. Tuolumne loses is fun to me above like 3,500 to 4,000. Don't want to swim grays for a damn mile. Yeah, I mean the only thing about those higher levels is the, you know, above like I can't remember the level, like 2,500, I think 3,000, the left line at grays opens up. And you know, a lot of people don't know that, so they take the middle line and there's a big hole and people flip in the middle on the line, the main hole. But there's a left line that's a little technical, but you know, it's pretty forgiving. So in some ways, like 3,000 is better at grays than 2,000. But yeah, it starts at 4,000. The whole river just starts getting hard and dangerous. It's pretty forgiving at like 2. This time of year, the tea flows on schedule and relatively accurate. Yeah, I mean, it's July. So once the snowmelt ends, whenever that is, this year is probably like in May. I have no idea. It's just 1,000 CFS, 3 hours a day. It's just dam release of 1,000 or 12, whatever they're releasing. Historically, it was like around 1,000. And yeah, it's 3 hours. So like the water gets to put in at like 10. You got to go. And then, you know, if you're camped at Clavey, the water gets there at noon. It's going to be till noon to launch. If you're camped at like North Fork, it gets there like 2, whatever. So you're on a schedule for water. Okay, right, so the quick answer is my favorite level is 1,000 personally. Your favorite level is probably 2,500. Go in April. All right, or Tower Right. Zach has always loved the show. Thank you. Guys, it's so nice because I feel like I do a terrible job sometimes. Especially the last episode. I just felt like I was in a mood and I was grumpy. And so I think I'm doing a bad job sometimes. And I probably was grumpy. So thank you for looking past that. I learned a ton going through your archive. And cool. Question. I bought a used raft and frame set up and the oars still don't quite feel right. I'm using your 1.63 rule for oar length. I'm set up to sit on a dry box, which sits 4 inches above the frame bar. I'd like to keep that part of the setup for multi-day trips if practical. How about oar tower height and distance forward? What's your rule for these measurements? So oar tower height, I it's just so you all know, like all of this stuff is complicated, interconnected. Somebody on submarine hole just asked me a similar question. I get these questions all the time. They asked me the similar question. My answer, and I put this in the submarine hole discussion that I had. You know, here, I can make your brain up here. Somebody asked me almost these same questions. Let me get back to there. Let's see. So if you go to private boaters, somebody asked me other design principles for a raft frame. You know, where should the rower's weight be centered? How far in front of the rower should the oar tower be stationed? All these, I get these questions all the time. And unfortunately, you can see my answer, like, it depends. It depends. Are you running class 4? Are you running class 5? Is it big water, low volume? Is it a 16-foot boat, a 12-foot boat? Are you taking overnight gear? Is it a single day? Do you have passengers? There's so many factors, and everything on your boat is so interconnected. I really can't answer this question correctly, and whether it's on this discussion board or on the internet, without physically being with you and looking at your boat. Like I guess I could. You could email me at the phone. I just don't have to go through it all. So it's very difficult to give you anything but a very general answer. I'm going to give you a very general answer to your question, which may or may not fit your individual thing. Like multiplying distance between your orbit by 1.63 is correct like 95% of the time. But sometimes it's incorrect, right? So like that one's pretty good. Other generalizations I'm going to tell you, there are exceptions to, and it depends on a lot of interconnected factors. So quickly, you're sitting on a dry box 4 inches above the bar. That's not bad. You know, I see people sitting a foot above the bar. That's a problem. But 4 inches isn't bad. Or tower height. I'm going to say just go 8-inch or towers. Do not go, if you go long 8 inches, they're taller, but they're also out farther. Which, guess what that does? That adds length to your oars. So, and if you go shorter, they're narrower, so it makes it makes your oar smaller. Going from 8-inch to 10-inch oar towers a lot of times adds like a foot to people's oar length, because they're splayed out so much that, you know, you multiply if it adds like 6 inches, like 3 inches out each way. Right, that's like 9 inches right there. If it's 4 inches each way, you got a foot. So I would stick with 8 inches. That should be what you want. If you have 6-inch or tower, think about 8. But my answer is across the board is go 8 inches, right? And then what's your rule or tower height and distance for? I'm going to put the or towers at about my knees. If you bring them in closer, it's very hard to ship oars. When I say ship, I mean correct ship, like handle, back blade, forward. And it's, you can't really get like enough, like it's hard to get stroke. Like the oars are too close to you to get stroke length, right? If it's too far ahead, you're leaning too far forward and it's just awkward and weird. So like you can adjust it if you have adjustable things, but if you have to choose now, about at your knees is where I'm going to put them as like a good starting point. It works for almost everybody. I suspect my oar towers are too short, but I'm not sure. 8 inches. If they're 8 inches, you're good. But yeah, I can tell you all, I see a lot of setups and I can look at them now and be like, that's horrible. Like that's, you're, and you just don't know that it could be way better. And our instructors see it to report back to me because we have our student boats, which are set up to perfect geometry. And then our instructors have to run Blossom because we don't let people run Blossom in our schools. And they run in our boats. It's very comfortable. Then they send our student boats where the geometry is just all messed up. A lot of frame makers know how to weld, but they don't know. They can boat too usually, but they don't have enough experience with like different oars and geometry to know how to make it feel comfortable or how to feel more powerful. And if your stuff doesn't work well, it's fine on the Rogue. It's fine on the main salmon. It's probably fine in the middle fork at your perfect levels. But as soon as things get harder, you're handicapping yourself. And I think that's what you're saying here. The oars still don't quite feel right. That is a common thing I see with private boater setups. And my best advice, and I've done some videos about this, sit low, do 1.63. Have them near your kneecaps and go with inch or towers. You do those things and it still feels awkward. I don't know how much more to help with it beyond that, other than looking at it and maybe there's something I'm missing. But, all right, moving on. Hopefully y'all can still hear me. I know my internet here sucks. Pins and clips. What's the best way to tune your pins? What does that even mean? I've gotten an okay fit through trial and error with rubber mallet. Oh, yeah. Like Mac and tuning, I think, is like a clip on the oar. You pound it to like get it just right. So like when your clip is on the pin, you want to be able to pull it out with like a very hard jerk, but you don't want to just have it come out. Like, yeah, you have to really pull it to get it out. Okay, that's tuning. I've got an okay fit to trial and error with rubber mallets on the side of the river, but there's got to be a better way. I use a rock on the side of the river, so you're already doing better than me. I'm just panning it with the rocks. So I have a rubber mallet. I would say a rubber mallet, you want a steel mallet. like need some weight. The rubber mallet doesn't seem like it would bend those. You want some weight. So I would say, what are they called? It's like a hard, a mallet, but it's got like hard plastic and a sand inside. There's a name for that. Like somebody out there knows the name of it, but it's like where it hits really hard, or just a hammer. Like a hammer. I just take a rock and run it. Sometimes they're too tight at the opening, and so it's hard to get the end of the pin. The top part of the wrist on the pin is still too loose. I can't figure out how to tighten the opening without tightening the top, vice versa. Yeah, I mean, trial and error. I have no answer I can give you by reading this and saying words back, other than just keep trying. Like, it's annoying. I would say rubber mallet isn't the best. Get something like, get a hammer or a rock. Dead blow. That's a dead blow is definitely better. If you're gonna do a something like that, get a dead blow, get a rubber mallet. They should be set so that like, I just practice a bunch, but like you can go throw it in, like lock it in, like a real hard, like bam, should get it in, and really hard, like jerk should get it out. But if you just like having your hand lean, it stays in. That's what you're kind of going for. And it just takes a bit of niggling with tools. Mefabra 6 says, I've had problems with the PVC sleeve on the dress pins, which were worn similarly, had issues tuning. I just ordered some Delrin piping to replace PVC, which I hope perform better. Yeah, I don't ever like using the PVC over the pin. To me, is horrible. Like, I've never had, I'd rather have spinnies, honestly. Like, the PVC is weird. I use the one that just a metal bolt. The clip just goes right on the metal. Sometimes there's like a metal sheath over the bolt. But the PVC, I just never really like. The PVC wears weird, so your tuning changes over time. All the ones I have the metal pin and the metal clip, and they just go on. And someday, maybe I'll figure out how to make them, but that's, I'm more focused on tearing containers than making pins. Good question. Sorry, I don't have a good answer. I don't have a good answer to any of these questions, actually. That's it. There's no commercial break this week. Those are all the questions. But I did want to finish by talking about something. I'll wait back here. Oh, Terry, I already talked about that because it came up. Yeah, cool. We're done. That's basically a commercial. I'm pretty jazzed about these containers. And it's really, they're really fun to move the camera. They're really fun to make, to design. They're going to be expensive, and I apologize for that in advance. But if you want them, I'll have them available maybe in a week when I get some time. But it's really fun to make purpose-built containers. The other thing I'm working on is a thing that sits on the outside of a bucket that a Meijer soap container can sit into. So instead of having your soap or your hand wash on the ground, it can like be on the bucket. So I've been designing that in CAD the past couple of days. And I'm just going to slowly be like coming up with things like this I'm excited about. But don't forget, you don't need to buy this. You can go buy some M&Ms. You can put in here. You can buy some gelato and eat your gelato. Put in there. This is a luxury item. This is just like, I want the best. Again, this is orange and red. But the real ones I'm going to make are going to be light blue and dark blue, which to me is a color of repair. This is more of like a safety first aid color. But I had to print these out for the trip I'm going on next. So I did it with what I had. So that's it. Thank you, everybody, for watching. I appreciate all the support, all the nice, kind words, even when I'm, like, you know, grumpy or if I make mistakes or, you know, thank you for all the support because I'm an imperfect person doing my best to share some things that I care about through this silly little internet show that I do. So that's it. We'll see you all probably in a week with maybe the right colored Terry containers for sale.